The 4th of July holiday stirs thoughts in me about so many things. The freedoms and good fortune I've enjoyed, the courage of the founders who declared independence, the people abroad longing to come here to flee persecution or pursue a dream of success. I think also about the practice of democracy. In Philadelphia, delegates from 13 British American colonies came together in a vote of independence from the king, launching our experiment in public participation in decisions affecting our common life. But American democracy was not hatched full and complete in 1776. Back then, some groups of people could not vote or hold public office. Some could not own property. Some people were the property of others. In a proposed early draft of the Declaration of Independence to the Continental Congress, Thomas Jefferson attacked the British king for bringing slavery to the colonies. Though a slaveholder himself, Jefferson called slavery a cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty. Fierce debate ensued about this passage to win over delegates from two southern colonies and from northern ones that profited from the slave trade. This passage was deleted from the Declaration. To be sure, the ongoing practice of democracy can correct earlier misdirections, but changing course does not change the past. It cannot return the black lives taken, or the women's lives suppressed, or the Japanese American lives put in internment camps, or the many children's lives marred by hunger and hard labor. On the other hand, in a democracy, some goals that seem impossible in one era become law in a later era. They can go from dismissible ideas to debatable ones to being the way things are now. So now women hold political office, serve in the military and in the clergy. So now lesbian couples and gay couples can get a legal marriage all across the land. But 30 years ago, marriage equality wasn't even a goal of the leading LGBT advocacy organizations. The Quaker educator and writer Parker J. Palmer explains that to practice democracy, we must acknowledge a tragic gap. The gap that separates what is from what could be and what should be. In any setting, nation, city, community organization, congregation, engaging in democracy requires the courage to inhabit that gap between where we are and where we could be. We live with discomfort or tension. We risk disappointment. In 1935, African-American poet Langston Hughes evoked the tension of that tragic gap, the space between his experience, the experience of other people he identified with, and their longing for a better land. He said, "America never was America to be, and yet I swear this oath, America will be." In Parker Palmer's words, democracy means we all depend on one another. We belong to each other. Even if we'd rather not, we do. Even when we want to assert our separateness, we all depend on one another in a nation, a community, or a congregation. Palmer says it is because of our need for each other that the sad condition of U.S. democracy in recent decades has taken him to the point of heartbreak, taken him into a dark hole of depression. In coming out of that place, he came to see that he was not alone. The politics of our time, he says, is the politics of the brokenhearted. Perhaps a broken heart epidemic is what leads so many people to proclaim things like, I don't vote. It doesn't matter. It won't change anything. It breaks my heart to hear people say that, to hear people surrender their power. It also hurts to hear people condemn a leader as just another politician. They're all alike. You can't trust them. But I know dedicated public servants, hardworking, patriotic people. I trust them. Our times are filled with demonization of political opponents and with people with whom we disagree. Rage-filled words that do no honor to words like debate or argument or compromise. On top of that, Palmer notes, is the violence of so many policies, denying our urgent human needs for food, health care, and a home. Or the mass incarceration of Americans, especially Black Americans, a higher percentage of people than in any other country. Our political decisions support wars that do not stop violence, but engender more of it. So many of our own people are suffering. Understandably, there is anger, which can fuel us and be constructive in a democracy. Anger may reflect our disappointments and our passions and our visions. But we are living in a time of rage-filled politics. Rage is something else. It relies on othering people, demonizing them, even dehumanizing them. How dare the president say that, we hear shrill voices accuse. Or the senator has betrayed America. Demonizing engenders fear in us, and rage robs us of hope for the future. Palmer says, rage is one of the masks that heartbreak wears. Of course, when it comes to matters of conviction or identity, passion is to be expected. About matters of survival, your own or that of a group on the margins of society, passion is inevitable. Disagreement and disappointment understandably can bring feelings of anger. That is why Palmer says we need compassion. We need to accept our disappointments with kindness and strive to understand where the other person is coming from. Palmer says compassion comes through exchanging our personal stories, by knowing one another. Learning how to tell our stories, how to know one another, is one reason why this congregation provides education programs for adults as well as children and youth. One example is Reverend Lucy's book discussion class over the summer. The book for August is Parker J. Palmer's book, Healing the Heart of Democracy. If you'd like to join them, sign up at the Connections table during coffee hour after the service. Palmer says his own heart has broken open. He is grateful, for with an open heart, he can try to look at all of us with compassion. He tries to see the potential in everyone. This compassion can lift his spirits. He says the way out of despair is for us to develop habits of the heart so that we can see the longing in everyone for a better future, so that we can see our shared humanity. In the words of Terry Tempest Williams, the human heart is the first home of democracy. When I look at the disheartening aspects of national politics, I gain hope, knowing that we still have personal opportunities to practice democracy. All over this land are places where we can gain the skills to listen and speak, to compromise and reach agreement with others. It doesn't have to be government or a political campaign. It could be an activity club or a service club or an arts or civic organization. Local ways of involvement can stretch our hearts. We can learn to live with disagreement and with discomfort. We can learn to live with dignity after setbacks and with compassion amid frustration. We can join a local organization when we feel called by its common purpose. We sense that we can both give of ourselves and gain by our involvement. The more we are involved, the more we can feel the joy of democracy. We depend on each other. Much of the time, this belonging feels warm and reassuring. Belonging to a congregation can be inspiring. Belonging to a state or a city can be a cause for pride, as much of the local boosterism and advertising to tourists would remind us. This is the best city in the country. This is the best state. In the midst of this good feeling, however, when the tensions of democracy arise, it can be confusing. We may be jarred out of our sense of comfort. We may feel disillusioned. What do we do when into the comfort of our community disagreement enters? Sometimes heated disagreement, which comes from a deeply held conviction or a sense of our identity. The presence of diversity is one thing that can jar us out of our comfort zones. Diversity of age, opinion, religious language, ethnic identity. Or how about one family shops at Whole Foods, the other at Walmart. Or she is a manicurist, he is a manuscript curator. In our surprise, tensions arise. Can I inhabit the same space as you? Can we hear the common heart we share? In an organization, the loss of comfort is not the same thing as the loss of a vote, but it can be jarring. Learning how to live with discomfort, or with confusion can be seen as a spiritual practice. Learning to be mindful of tension, to be mindful of our urge to flee tension or to suppress it, can be seen as a spiritual practice. Democracy, then, can be appreciated as an opportunity for spiritual growth, opening the heart. The late political journalist from Texas, Molly Ivins, wrote that to appreciate democracy, you must possess a certain relish for confusion. Remembering our sense of humor can get us through. We also can remember the values that called us together in the first place, like a founding declaration, an inspiring mission statement, a congregational covenant, or the vision for a better world. July 1st marked a new term of office for several elected volunteers who serve this congregation through various leadership posts. They get to practice democracy and leadership month after month, and they lead us in practicing democracy. Our board has a covenant which the members recite at every meeting. Our lay leaders and ministers try to accept alternative ideas and to relish the confusions of working together. We try to bring clarity when we can, but also to bring patience, forgiveness, and humor when perfection is beyond our grasp, which it usually is. Now, I ask you to imagine the cavernous hall of a convention center where you might attend a rock concert, but this is not a rock concert. Up on a wide stage is a podium with a microphone, plus room and chairs behind it for a choir of 200. Hanging off to the sides of the stage are two projection screens. Since you can't see a person's face at the podium if you're seated very far away, and there is a sea of chairs, rows and rows of chairs divided by 6 or 7 wide aisles. About 4,600 Unitarian Universalists recently gathered in such a meeting hall in Portland, Oregon, for an exercise of democracy. 2 dozen of our UUSS members made the trip up there for General Assembly. the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association, or GA for short. In the near future, various members will tell you what they learned and what they brought back to UUSS from the varied workshops, worship services, lectures, public witness events, and their personal conversations with UUs from near and far. GA is part business meeting and part revival meeting. It's a church convention and a trade show for spiritual progressives. Just over a third of those 4,600 people were voting delegates from congregations. Important business happens in the business meetings at GA, decisions that shape the structure and the future of our denomination. But what often generates the most heat and excitement are the discussions of social action issues. At every GA, delegates vote to select three actions of immediate witness. These are statements about a recent and urgent social issue. By approving one, the delegates ask our congregations to pay attention, learn more, and get involved. Early in the week of GA, proponents of many issues will come at the delegates carrying petitions asking you for your signature. Yet most of their proposals will not end up on the ballot, but they will be set aside by the elected volunteers who manage the process. This can be frustrating for those who put their hearts into their proposals. Of the proposals that do end up on the ballot, only three will win the status of an action of immediate witness. This year at GA, the Youth Caucus proposed an action to support the Black Lives Matter movement. What is a youth caucus, you ask? Imagine 275 teenagers deliberating in separate breakout sessions where they decide to take a position on the issues as one body. During full GA business sessions in the convention hall, the youth all sit together. When a youth caucus member goes to the microphone to address the delegate body, others lined up behind them to show solidarity. You can feel the passion among them, no less than among the many delegates who are much older than they are. In several GA workshops, as well as during the floor debate, we learned about the Black Lives Matter movement. 2 years ago, it was launched by three young black women after a jury in Florida found George Zimmerman not guilty of murder after he'd shot and killed Trayvon Martin, an unarmed young black man. The movement gained momentum after several police-involved shootings of unarmed men and boys in several other cities. It gained more urgency after a young white man shouting words of racist fear and hatred killed 9 black worshipers at a church in South Carolina. And then more urgency after several black churches were burned. Our youth caucus at GA wanted the General Assembly to ask our congregations to stand up with black-led racial justice organizations working as part of Black Lives Matter. In summary, this action of immediate witness reads, the 2015 General Assembly recognizes that the fight for civil rights and equality is as real today as it was decades ago. It urges member congregations to collaborate with local and national organizations fighting for racial justice against the harsh racial practices many black people are exposed to. End of quotation. During the debate over this action and over the amendments to it, some older UUs expressed concern. One said, why accept a racial category, black, constructed by a racist system? What about the lives of poor whites, the working poor, or the unemployed? What about the lives of indigenous people robbed of lands by corporate coal mines, and oil wells. Younger ones replied, "Of course, all lives matter, but this is about hearing African American families in their grief, their anger, and their fear. It is about standing in solidarity with a community that needs hope and needs allies to bear witness." Other delegates voiced concern regarding a phrase in the motion about prison reform, and they moved to amend the language. Younger delegates objected to this wordsmithing. They argued for keeping strong language. Many of those younger delegates were delegates of color, and it's easy to see at General Assembly that most of the ethnic diversity in our denomination comes from the younger adults and the youth among the Unitarian Universalist Association. A black young woman, Unitarian Universalist from Knoxville, Tennessee, is a trainer of progressive activists for the Highlander Center, which has existed in Tennessee since 1932. This woman had skipped a professional conference, she said, because she wanted to help her faith community respond to this urgent issue. When she came to the delegate microphone, she said, or this is what I heard her say, "Don't vote for this if you just want to feel good about yourself." You could feel the tension and the passion from those who spoke at the pro microphone, and those who spoke at the con microphone, and those who came to the center microphone to raise questions of procedure. I worried that our newer and younger UUs might become disillusioned about this faith tradition, for which they clearly have passion and love. In the midst of growing frustration, the moderator of our General Assembly said, "I think we need to take some time to breathe." He said that, and then we took some silence. We also sang. After more debate, and after the counting of votes by hand all throughout the hall, the motion was approved by an overwhelming majority. Many people went outside for a brief rally, especially young adults and teenagers. There was joy and relief at a successful vote. Yet joy was also merged with a reminder of the tragic gap of our common life, the gap between ideals of equality and the experience of enduring inequities. Engaging in democracy not only takes acceptance of messiness and confusion, or even relishing in confusion, it requires the courage and the faith to inhabit the gap that exists between where we are and where we wish we were. Democracy takes both passion and patience. It asks us to live with tension and with discomfort and to stick together. Democracy means that people depend on one another. We belong to each other. So may it be, and so may we live. Blessed be, and amen.